Last year, for the first time, this sound was heard in Israel. The piece is the Siegfried Idyll, and it's considered one of the most sweet and tender compositions in classical music. It's one of the many works of Richard Wagner, a musical genius and titan of musical drama and opera, Lohengrin, The Ring Cycle, Parsifal. He is also arguably one of the most controversial figures in the history of music. Richard Wagner was an anti-Semite. Alongside the operas and other music he composed in the 19th century, Wagner also wrote essays condemning Jews. Adolf Hitler saw Wagner as a hero, though the two men never met. Wagner had been dead 50 years before Hitler came to power. But the connection between Wagner and the Third Reich is not easily forgotten. For more than half a century, Wagner has been a pariah in Israel. Performing his music was taboo, even though Israeli orchestras did play the music of known anti-Semites. But Wagner remained off-limits. Until last fall, Martin Goldsmith, the former host of NPR's Performance Today and now director of classical music at XM Satellite Radio, joins us in the studio. Welcome back, Martin.
It's great to be here, Melinda.
Well, Martin, bring us up to speed. For more than half a century, Wagner has been banned in Israel. And then last fall, a court in Israel weighed in and did what?
Well, allowed this performance of the Siegfried Idyll, a bit of which we just heard, to go forward. Adolf Hitler embraced Richard Wagner fervently, and Wagner was held up as an icon of the National Socialists. And so naturally, the survivors who peopled Israel in great numbers following the war held Wagner in the greatest contempt and the greatest fear and loathing as well. And there was, as you say, sort of an unofficial ban on the performance of Richard Wagner on state radio, in orchestras and opera companies in Israel. No Wagner was performed. About 20 years ago, in 1981, Zubin Mehta, who is the music director of the Israel Philharmonic, came to the end of a concert and came back out on stage and announced, as an encore, I would like to play the prelude and Liebestod from Wagner's opera Tristan and Isolde. And immediately, people in the audience stood up and began saying no and screaming and whistling, and Zubin Mehta was essentially booed off the stage before he could perform that music by Wagner. About 10 years after that, Daniel Barenboim, an Israeli conductor, attempted to put on music by Wagner, and he too was essentially not allowed to make that happen. So last October, for the first time, a smaller Israeli orchestra announced that during a noontime concert, they would perform this very lovely Siegfried Idyll. But as you say, it took the intervention of the Israeli Supreme Court to make that concert happen, because people had come forward with suits denying or attempting to deny that orchestra the opportunity to play the music.
Now, if Israel didn't ban the works of other known anti-Semites, why Wagner? Was it because of that Hitler connection?
Well, Wagner did write a few tracts about the Jews, calling them cannibals and saying that Jews were fit only to conduct business and resurrecting all the old canards about Jews. He was just not a nice man in any respect. And then Adolf Hitler came along 50 years after Wagner's death to say, famously, anyone who would understand National Socialism must understand Richard Wagner. This music was heard in newsreels depicting the German Blitzkrieg in the Second World War. And this kind of very aggressive music by Wagner is what a lot of people thought was his music, his style.
what changed in Israel so that the door is now open to hear this type of music by Wagner, mm-hmm. of any music by Wagner, and this in particular?
Well, I should hasten to say that things haven't changed completely, because there is still a great deal of animosity and a great deal of resistance to ever hearing this music, ever even having this music performed. But the young composer I mentioned, Gil Shohat, said, in effect, look, it was Adolf Hitler who said, this music is ours. Wagner is the Germans. It is the Aryan race. I think we, as Jews, are closing a very important door to ourselves if we sort of have this self-imposed ban.
And even in the last century, many of Wagner's champions have been Jewish conductors.
Absolutely. He, in fact, and this gives the story an interesting twist, he asked a very prominent Jewish conductor, Hermann Levy, to conduct the premiere of his most Christian opera, Parsifal, right at the very end of his career. And certainly in our century, Sir George Scholte was a great Wagner champion. James Levine, the current music director of the Metropolitan Opera, is a Wagner champion. Leonard Bernstein was once quoted as saying, I despise Wagner, but on my knees. And then there's the case of Bruno Walter, who was born Bruno Schlesinger, a Jew, and he actually changed his name to Walter after the character who wins the singing contest in Wagner's opera Die Meistersinger. Here's a little bit of Bruno Walter conducting music from Wagner's opera Tannhäuser.
Aside the politics of this for a moment, what is it that makes Wagner a genius in your mind, a musical genius?
He is an absolute stunning composer of gorgeous music. And certainly where the Ring Cycle is concerned, he is a great poet as well. I mean, he wrote the libretto, he wrote the words and the music to all four of these gigantic Ring Cycle operas. And his vision of man with a capital M and woman with a capital W and gods and heroes and nature. And it is just a stunning vision rooted in myth that all human beings can relate to. I mean, in many ways, George Lucas's Star Wars movies are just a modern retelling of the Ring Cycle, this power that is gleaned from this ring and how it can lead to danger, and yet eventually we are all redeemed by love. I mean, these are huge topics. Wagner has been rightly called bombastic, and it is sometimes an endurance contest to sit through some of his operas. But to my mind, the music is so exciting. I mean, here is how the end of the very first Ring opera ends, with the gods walking over this rainbow bridge to their brand new home in Valhalla.
What does Wagner bring to opera that, say, others didn't? Say, Giuseppe Verdi. Mm-hmm. I mean, what could you quantify as the difference between them?
Interesting you bring those two up, because I think there are a lot of opera lovers who divide themselves into one camp or the other, either Verdians or Wagnerians. Giuseppe Verdi was the master of melody, and he was a true Italian showman, and he knew what his audiences wanted, which was a succession of beautiful arias where you will hear, say, in his opera Aida, for instance, suddenly the action comes to a stop and the noble Captain Radames, you know, strides forward to the footlights and belts out, "Celeste Aida, I really love Aida. What a beautiful gal she is." This is a Verdi specialty, just churning out one beautiful melody after another. Wagner was not interested in those little moments. He was interested in the big picture, and he didn't want to stop the action even for a moment to allow one of his singers to, as I say, walk down to the footlights and belt something out. He was interested in the psychological underpinnings of everything, and so he created what he called a Gesamtkunstwerk, meaning a complete work of art, something that would envelop the orchestra, the characters, the scenery, the costumes, the psychology, and there was no room in that for a pretty little melody. I think that his music is gorgeous, but on a much bigger scale.
So give us an example of that we could hear in an opera.
Well, a good example is the Love Death from his opera Tristan and Isolde. And there's this incredible love story involving betrayal and love and passion and lust and all of those wonderful human qualities. And at the end, we have Tristan, who is already dead, and then Isolde, who is going to follow in his footsteps. But before she can do that, of course, she has to sing for 20 minutes before she is ready to embrace death.
Wagner loved orchestration so much. Why did he write only one symphony?
And that was at the very beginning of his career, and it's almost never played today. I think he found his niche. He decided that he was the creator of these grand music dramas. And while he revered the symphonies of Beethoven, he thought of himself as a dramatist, and he was telling huge stories that could only be done with scenery and costumes and singers and actors on stage.
Getting back to Wagner being played in Israel, mm-hmm. I guess the essential question here is, can one separate a composer's politics from his art?
That, of course, has to be an individual decision. There are people who, with all the goodwill in the world, will say, I am not going to listen to music by Wagner, or I'm not going to read a book by Celine. I happen to love Wagner, and I think that you sort of have to check those sensibilities at the door with your coat. There is nothing that can compare with the end of the Ring cycle, where everything comes together. There is something magical that you can get that I have experienced nowhere else. It is just astounding.
Martin Goldsmith, thank you so much for joining us today.
My great pleasure, Melinda. Thank you.
Martin Goldsmith, former host of NPR's Performance Today and current director of classical music for XM Satellite Radio. One last note, the Wagner controversy is likely to heat up in Israel this summer. Daniel Barenboim has commissioned a German opera company to perform Wagner's Die Walküre in June at the Israel Festival in Jerusalem.